Okay, so I know there are some concerns that there are a lot of changes in here, but I did want to go really quick. I know not everybody's in here, but there are about 31 total changes. 13 of those changes simplify or clean up language. Four were previously considered without any major concern, and eight have been part of the timeline changes. And then, in addition to the timeline changes, there's only six other new ones. So it's not really a major overhaul in my eyes. I mean, that sounds like a lot, but.
Okay. Any questions? Continue.
Okay. So the piece that I is has never been seen, but is a, I feel, major change. Has to do with absentee mailing and establishing an address verification process so that we can begin list maintenance on a different level other than just this mail was returned. We know that's a bad address. So right now, I have some numbers for you guys because you know I love numbers. So we have 14,441 people that are Osage Nation members that have never voted. Never voted. Amongst our current living voters today, of course, there could be deceased in there because not everybody reports their deceased family members to membership. We have 4,333 voters that have voted at some point since 2014. And why this number is important, we have 2,533 permanent absentee voters.
Can you repeat that number, please?
Yes, ma'am. 2,533 permanent absentee voters.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am. We don't
Do
even
you
have that
all
number.
have that separated out or know if the out of those where the pie would tell us how many of those people are in county or in
Not
state?
right here,
Okay.
but I can, yes. Our new system has so many different capabilities that allow me to pull numbers in 2 seconds compared to what we used to have to do.
If you could, when you have time, if you could send us that to the clerk to disseminate, that's an interesting number because it's kind of low, I think, right? I mean, I think it's low because we have so many voters outside of the state of Oklahoma. So I would have thought that that number would have been higher. I don't know about anyone else. I would have thought that that number would be in the 6,000, realizing that even out of those 6,000 that are permanent absentee voters or out of the 2,533, realizing that not everyone sends in their ballot even though they're on that list. Just Congresswoman Lemon.
I'm one of those people, and Alexis might be like, you probably shouldn't do this, but my mother taught us
Yes, you
that,
should.
you know what I'm gonna say? That you get on that list and you stay on that list because what if you can't show up that day to vote? That way you have that in the mail and you still get to vote.
There's a lot of people that feel
So,
that way. And with that question, I would say out of that 2,533, how many people do you actually have come in to relinquish their absentee voting that will vote right there in person? If you all don't have that at some point, I know your all's goal is to invest into software that advances you all. I think, I mean, I've heard that in some of your all's meetings, and so we shouldn't be surprised at some point for you all to ask for more money for some of those advancements, because I know that the address issue is a real issue for you all, and the conversation and discussions I see there are who manages that, the election office or membership?
I actually already have the answer to that question. Last election year was our first election in our new database that it was delayed internally, not within my department, but it was delayed. And so implementation plus, you know, the whole nation shutdown thing during election year was great. But once it was up and running, and we were just trying to get through the election year at that point. And once the election was over, I've been able to dig deeper into the capabilities of the system, and it was built for elections. We can do so much more now than we could before. And these absentee list maintenance changes is sort of a pilot program for what we could, if we ever make a big change like this, could do to the entire list. And so before we were in CRM and everybody had access and everybody could change a voter's address. That's not the case. We moved our voter data to, we call it OVR, Osage Voter Registry. And it's through a company called ESNS, and we now manage all of our address changes in-house, and we require actual documentation in order to change those so that we just attach their barcode to the piece of paper, scan it, and attach it to their voter record. You can look up any voter in our system and see all of their documentation. So we have an audit trail of every change that's made in our system and documentation backing it up. So the address issue that we're gonna show you today could be expanded on a much larger scale.
All right.
So back to the numbers.
Yeah.
Okay, because this one is where it gets really interesting. So out of the living voters who have voted in any election since 2014, remember, our base number is 4,333. So in the last 5 years, 1,151 of those people haven't voted.
1,151
have not voted
since 2014?
Since 2020.
Oh, 2020.
So that number is going to go down, but you don't add them all together whenever I move forward. There are 764 people that have not voted since 2018 or before. 482 haven't voted in 8 years. 389 of those people haven't voted in 9 years. So makes you wonder, if those people haven't voted in 9 years, are they deceased? I don't know what's going on there with the numbers. I know we do have a lot of deceased people on our list that we can't remove.
Okay. They're very interesting numbers. I'm almost terrified We never want to scare people with the election process. We don't want to do that. But the numbers that you're throwing out are very interesting, and the whys are even more interesting. And the reasons are, they could be deceased, or they
uninterested.
Just feel like, well, I voted the way I voted and none of my people got in and it's not going to make a dent. I hear that from people. Not that I agree with it, but the state recently did what they did to say, if you haven't voted in a while, we need you to come back and verify that you're still interested in voting. You're still living, you're still, I mean, mm-hmm. there was a, yeah. So I'm not saying we're going to go that route. I'm just saying the state, obviously the state has had issues and the federal government have had issues with this. And that was their way of moving forward to verify why people haven't voted in 10, 12, 15 years, 20 years. I mean, some people were 30 years, I think I heard on the news, or more. So Congresswoman Whitehorn had her hand up.
So I'm glad you have your own voter system. I think that's important, where you're responsible and you have control over the changes and the address changes. Have you compared that number of voters that you can identify that haven't voted in election, can you compare that with membership numbers? Is that allowed and authorized for you to be able to do that? Because membership would be the place that would most likely know of deceased members. So I'm curious, have you done that cross check?
Okay, so the way our voters are entered into our new system is I run a report from CRM, so we still have access to our old system. Okay. And then we pull those voters over into a list and create a voter record for each one of them. And then the new ones are put in, the relinquished ones have their status changed to canceled and then relinquished. And then the deceased also get changed that way too. And the new voters, obviously, there's a whole lot of those.
Okay.
Follow up?
Not a follow up to that, but I was trying to listen back in that room when you guys got started. Cancel absentee voter status. I know you guys.
I'm working there. Yes.
Are we getting to that? Okay. Thank you.
So, I know those numbers were big, but they're going to be bigger than the next set of numbers that I present to you. But these numbers have a cost to them. These numbers, the permanent absentee voters that have not voted since 2020 or before, 602. Multiply that by postage for a ballot that we still have to mail out. Multiply that by printing. I should have brought that number now that I think about it. Sorry. Multiply that by printing. Courtney and I hand stuff these ballots. Postage, seal, these ballots. It's a lot of time and energy and resources, and we have 602 people that haven't voted in 5 years. We have 347 that haven't voted in 7 years. We have 219 in 8 years and 144 in 9 years. And if you want me to repeat those, I can. Yes. So they just build up over time.
Congresswoman Lemon.
Very first, can I address Ms. Rencounter? Yep. Thank you. 602, tell me what that is again. I think I heard it right, but clarify it.
Those are permanent absentee voters.
Okay.
That we are required to mail ballots to, no matter what, that have not voted in the last 5 years. So in the last two general elections.
Thank you very much.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
And because I know a little bit about how you do things, if they voted in person, you would be able to detect that, cross-reference that with the absentee ballot that was sent. So they haven't walked in and voted.
They haven't voted by any means.
By any means. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. So previously, we had legislation that removed the permanent absentee program, which would require voters to submit requests every election year. And that legislation was vetoed, but it gave us time to learn and grow from there. And I did speak with Chief, and he does support this set of changes from the election board. So I feel very confident that we're not going to receive a veto. These changes leave the permanent absentee program in place, but it establishes a process for list maintenance. If there's a whole process lined out, but if a voter's absentee status is ever canceled, they decide that they want to vote absentee again in the future, they can. All they have to do is submit another application. So it's everybody who's eligible to vote can vote any way that they want, but we are trying to clean up the cost of the absentee ballots going out in the mail and the time that consumes our staff. And financially, you know, I believe in the last election, off the top of my head, we had 133 people that requested absentee that came in and walked in and voted. Don't quote me on that number, but it was over 100, but it wasn't a large number that you would expect. And that is an off election year. There was no chief in there. So that is a difference between election years. So the process for this list maintenance would be mail out would go specifically to absentee voters, permanent absentee voters. It would be non-forwarding, first class, and we would request the United States Postal Service for address correction notification. So let me see here. That would get returned. We had 175 ballots mailed out last year that we knew before we even mailed them were getting returned, because we have the printer do a check, even though we have to mail them to the address on their file that stated those addresses were bad, undeliverable.
Okay.
Well, and we had to mail them out anyway.
I think that needs to be addressed. I would... That I don't know how it's going to be addressed, but I would hope that no elected official is good with hearing that and saying, proceed, don't address it, we don't need to worry about it, just leave it the way it is. Number one, it's a waste of money and time, and if we really are serious about trying to engage people to vote, why in the heck would we send the ballot to an already known address that's not deliverable for the person that it's intended to be there to? That's just my thoughts. All right, continue. Or any questions
so far?
Congresswoman Rebard.
Yeah, it's I think every election year too, every 2 years, I always felt like, you know, I wish that we would champion asking people to update their addresses to some degree and, roll that out before we start. Like, hey, election's coming up, please. And I feel like we do it a little bit, but not as much as we could. And I know that that's something that was a concern with you too.
Yes, ma'am. So, and we already have a purchase request in the process for one of the USPS's licensees for their national change of address vendors. But this company does so much more than just run the list through the national change of address database, which is like 48 months, I believe. It also can run it through the proprietary change of address, which goes back 30 years. So we're going to cleanse our voter data going back 30 years. And even though we know we cannot change anything in the system until a voter changes it, we can at least know, they will be able to update those addresses, hopefully for us, suppress and identify the deceased people for us, and then also append emails and cell phone numbers. So we are in the proactive stance of trying to get information updated. And that part is included in here as well. But we know people move fast. Some people request an absentee ballot and they move a month later. It's just how it is.
Questions? Congresswoman Redcorn.
So, and this honestly isn't really necessarily to your bill, but you mentioned something that is interesting and kind of cool. So that when you go back and you're going to update, like with that whole proprietary contractor business on the address thing, and let's say you get a new address for someone, And like they've been there 2 years. And so like you're finding out basically that they have a new address. It's like, oh, this person that has not been voting for 6 years has a new address and they've had it for 2 years. Are we going to make an attempt to send a postcard maybe? I know we can't change the address in our system, but can we send them a postcard and be like, hey, we noticed you moved. Would you like to update your address so you can vote again? I mean, because maybe there's a few people out there who are like, why aren't they sending me a ballot? I changed my address with this office or with the newspaper or where somebody, and yet not, and they didn't get to you all. And so I just wonder, are you going to communicate with those people when you find out that some of those changes exist? And maybe not.
So that is a part of this process, the notice process, in order to, like I said, though, these changes apply directly to the absentee list only, but once we get our initial review of our larger data list, we will be mailing contact update forms to those people so that they can, we have to at least try to get updated information. So after the first notice, obviously a mail piece comes back, it's returned undeliverable, and then we would require a second notice requesting updated contact information from the voter. This would be sent by forwarding mail and the first class, and voters are required to respond within 30 days. No response changes the voter's absentee status from active to inactive.
Is there a way to, I'm sure you guys have talked about it or considered it, and maybe there's not, I'll just ask. Is there a way to do that with our voter registry phone or email instead of sending out another letter?
Yes. So we would be, with the data cleansing, we would be receiving verifying email addresses to make sure that they're still valid, and then also appending an email address to anybody that doesn't have one. And so that would be our first line of communication, is emailing contact update information forms to voters, and then obviously wait a little bit until some time passes and mail them as well. Because this first batch is going to be large. We're going to have a large initial, I expect, return.
Questions? Congresswoman Whitehorn?
I like that we're doing this. Is this a function of law, though, or is this something that you guys are doing as process? And do you foresee it someday going into law, the digital and electronic form of registration or communication with the elections office is going to be part of our code? Because, I mean,
I have high hopes.
If we're doing all this work and spending the money to do it, I would think that that would be a future goal and objective.
So down the line, we all know the people in these seats change. I could be changing at any point. You never know. Chief will change. So I can't predict the future. It is my hope, if I stay here, that, not if, I really want to stay here, okay? But we would expand these capabilities. And yes, I understand that it's not a requirement in law. It will be for absentee. It's not, and that's just our pilot program, basically, for lack of better terms. Yes. It is, let me see what it says. The office may use the change of address information supplied by the Postal Service through its licensees to identify voters whose address may have changed. And then if it appears the voter has moved to a different address, we send notice, and then they have 30 days to respond to update. But like I said, that's not just mail. We do have email as well. So after that, if there is no response, then we would be changing the status of permanent absentee voters only at this point. In order to change from inactive back to active, all you have to do is participate in some kind of election activity, which would be voting, updating your contact information, signing a petition. If that ever happens, I know those numbers are impossible to reach as it stands right now. I have ideas on how to make those change, but I don't think the nation's ready for that yet. Just saying, I'm just being honest. So then, yes, government is slow. So in order to cancel an absentee voter's status, they would still be eligible to vote no matter what because they're a member and they're 18. So we are only canceling their permanent absentee status. I have to repeat that. We are only canceling your permanent absentee status, nothing else. If you are inactive, which we've already gone through the notice process, if you remain inactive for 4 calendar years, you haven't done anything with us, then we can cancel your voter status. So that...
Hold on, Congresswoman Lemon and then Whitehorn.
Okay, this is going to be a sticking point for a lot of folks.
Ms. Yes, ma'am.
So I understand the why, of where you landed, but I think the most important piece, and I think we should say it again, like you said, is that you can become a permanent absentee voter again by applying to become a permanent absentee voter again. It doesn't mean that you are. What is it? Persona non grata?
Banned
from the list. 86th. No. What other words can we think of that people will understand? It doesn't mean you're banned and you can never, ever, ever be a permanent absentee voter again. It just means because of your inactivity for an extended period of time, you are going to be taken off of the list.
The absentee list, not the voter list.
That's right. The absentee, permanent absentee voter list. But you can get right back on by applying.
Yes.
But you can still show up in person and vote also.
Yes.
So will you repeat that better than I did?
Oh, I don't know if I can.
Yeah, you can.
So we are not removing any voters from the Osage Voter Registry, period. The only status that is being changed is your permanent absentee status. And you can always become a permanent absentee voter again by filling out a new form.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Because I don't have the full code in front of me here, absentee ballot or absentee voter are defined in the original code. Is that correct? I don't have it either. I haven't pulled it.
I don't have that answer in front of me. Okay. I'm so sorry.
All right. Well, the
code's to memorize.
You don't have it memorized?
No.
Let my idea flow, though. I believe that if we're going to have a status of an inactive voter, it should be defined in the code. And so that way, you know, I know that you're going to address it in the permanent absentee ballot portion of the code. But we should truly define what you consider or what we decide is an inactive voter.
Very valid.
Continue.
Thank you. So the inactive voters after 4 calendar years would be removed from the absentee list, or if the voter has not voted for 4 calendar years, which would mainly include, we're assuming, deceased people. We received 28 calls from spouses that had deceased family members that had received ballots. And it is very upsetting for families to receive those. And we do talk through the process with them and direct them to membership, but it doesn't always get done. In order, you have to submit a death certificate. And that's, I can't remember if it's a copy or the actual.
I think it's an original. I'm not.
And those cost money. Though. I know, because I paid for some. So those cost money and time to get them and submit them to membership.
Well, okay, so I have a question there, and then I'll go to Red Corn. Okay, so is our guess that they are not utilizing the burial assistance, and therefore we don't know? But, you know, here in itself, this is a problem, because this is where fraud can come in.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we should be thinking about that. It's on our radar. How do we address that? I don't know, but Jody knows.
I do.
But fraud can come into play there, you know, and obviously we want this to be as ethical as possible. But I've got Red Corn and then Reverb.
I went ahead and looked it up in the code. An absentee voter is defined, means a qualified voter who has successfully applied to the Osage Nation Election Board for such status and is entitled to vote by absentee ballot according to prescribed rules. There is not a definition for permanent absentee voter, but I don't know that that's really if it's needed, because that's a
the process is provided for it.
Yeah, because absentee voter is determined in law.
Reverb.
One of the, you know, just thinking, I'm asking Alexis, have you guys championed, you know, to get current addresses? But I think that's something membership ought to do, as the nucleus of all of our database of our members, is something that maybe that membership could roll out, is like, let's start getting an updated information. And again, if your folks, you know, if someone's deceased, provide whatever. I don't agree that it has to be certified. That is, you're right. It's hard to get those. Usually, if you're in a big family, then there's only usually one of them, or the executrix or the administrator that's getting those, and blah blah blah. But what I'm saying is maybe the membership office could champion, hey, update your address, and this is why. This is what we're looking for. But it sounds like you guys have your own database, but you have access to the membership, the CRM.
Yes.
Okay, just to verify.
We
you share your info?
We would prefer actual voter documentation in order to change addresses, so that we know so and so is not mad at so and so and whatever department, and changes the address to where their ballots go.
I totally agree, but I do think it's something. I mean, yeah, we don't want
but
that.
Yes, but
I do think it's something that we should be doing at every event
mm-hmm.
that the Osage Nation has. This should be something that starts up, like, we need your address, you know, information, and to update. And if someone's deceased, and I mentioned this, when I did my mail out, the company that I used does the same. It filters out for me deceased, address changes. I just pay for that extra service. Most do that now, because I would hate to send something incorrect, is all I'd say, to the wrong person or someone not living. And but I know that there's a way to do that, but I just think maybe that membership, that could be something that they could do as well. You'd just be surprised if you got to take the initiative to want to seek the addresses and better information, and we should be doing that all the time.
Go ahead.
So the other part of our new system is access to a voter portal. Voters in the Osage Nation can go onto our website and access their own information via our voter portal. And we had a change done after the last election that now allows you to see the mailing address we have on file for you in our database currently. So we are currently have a RFP up for marketing and communications in order to help with these issues as well, the address issues and teaching people how to use the voter portal. And then the voter portal, in addition to all of that, will have your basic election information, and you would be able to track your ballot. You would know the day it was mailed, you know the day it was received, you would know that it was counted, those kind of things. We're fancy now.
All right, anyone? Questions? Okay, keep going.
Wait.
Where do you want me to go to? Okay. I don't know.
Where are you at?
One.
Absentee verification of absentee mailing addresses.
How much more do you have?
Nothing.
After that, you're done?
Oh, no, I do have just like one-ish, one.
Okay, keep going. We've got
20 minutes. I'm going to go fast. I'm going to skip the things that are not cleanup really quick. So the one that I know may get pushback is the anonymous donations. That is a new change. In the last election year, we had a scenario play out where the candidate made the mistake of putting a basket for donations out at their event. Someone left $130 in the basket anonymously. The candidate made the ethical decision to report it to the election office. The board then was required the candidate per law to donate $130, which was the amount of the anonymous donation, to the Osage Nation Foundation. They provided proof back to our office and then issued a $1,000 fine. So that basket error cost the candidate $1,130. And the fine, from my understanding, did not really match the violation, especially when they made the ethical decision to self-report.
This is one of those areas, and I'm aware of who that person was. I wasn't surprised that she did the right thing. I hated that for her. On the other hand, everyone got a copy of those rules, and if I were someone, I wouldn't have put a basket out. That's what I wouldn't have done. That being said, we went round and round after the last chief's election and heard from both sides of supporters, of people that supported those candidates. One candidate had a bunch of donations from people we do business with as a nation. No one liked that. One candidate had $8,000 in their basket. No one knew who it came from, and people didn't like that. The compromise with this body was, we're going to address both scenarios. We're going to have to address both scenarios. That's the fair thing to do, because we've all heard from all the people that didn't like those situations. So what's your all's, what are you changing?
So the amendment made would remove the fine of $1,000 and make the fine equal to the donation amount. So if you self-report $130 received anonymously, you would donate that $130 to the foundation still, and then you would pay a $130 fine to the election board.
I mean, everyone's like, well, yeah, I mean, what if it's an $800? What if it's $10,000? I don't know. I think that where the education comes into play is that when you have your orientation, that you tell candidates, don't put that basket out there. There's a way, and people, we've been running. Numerous people have ran since you implemented that last rule, and they did not fall into the same category. We all have our ways of doing it. I have told people how I do things. I will not take, if people, I've got someone behind me, And it's my sister, Heather, and she's got a pen and paper. And as people are bringing me stuff, I hand it to her. She's my designated person. And I say, Maria Whitehorn, I don't even look to see how much, if it's a check or if it's a cash, and hand it to her, Pam Shaw. And she writes it down. That's how I do it. And I've never, but I'm not putting a basket out to run into that problem. I can promise you that. So, Congresswoman Rivard.
So, when they helped, the last time that I ran, they had a wonderful orientation. Wonderful orientation, very thorough. It was very thorough, very laid out, very simplified, actually. And they had more fines, I think, this last election than ever. So to tell somebody, don't put a basket out, they did. They told people, like, very clear, like, besides her holding a basket up and saying, don't do this, that orientation was on point. The best orientation and training, so simple, but we had the most fines. So I don't know if it's at the fault of their orientation. I don't think so.
I don't think it's at the fault.
No, at all.
Maybe next time hold the basket up, Alexis. I don't think it's at the fault at all. I just think that, you know, it.
Candidates don't read.
It's a shame. It's the whole thing was, you know, I felt really bad for that candidate. And I'll just say that much. Congressman King.
And for the record, I was the most fined candidate last election, and it was not the fault of the board. I just wasn't paying attention and reading. So I just want to clear that up. Thank you.
And yet you were elected by the people. Yes.
It's so that is also, thank you, though, for pointing that out, I think. That is one other communication that will be going out after these board meetings is email notifications to the public about what happens with these campaign finance, so it's more publicly seen and more transparent.
All right, any more discussion questions?
For this?
Yeah.
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, I've been a poll watcher for people, and I've had poll watchers. A lot of people don't do that, but I have. And I'm going to tell you, when I was a poll watcher during a chief's election, that was, to me, I'm a geek. I like this kind of stuff. So that was marvelous. I got to see the process. I got to see how it worked, and I enjoyed it. But and they are so good to include the poll watchers in. They let you know when things are happening. The only thing that I saw as a shortcoming in our code as far as being a poll watcher, which I think is necessary, is that when they, since we run our own voting machines, when they calibrate our machines, I know that, and I've looked a lot of different voting districts, they allow for a poll watcher to be there when they do the calibration of the machines. Now, I would probably not ever know what they were doing. But the fact that you can have a poll watcher there to watch that process is a good process. And currently we don't have that in our law that the poll watcher can be included in that. So I'd like to see that amended into the code, that's a thing that the poll watcher can participate in when you calibrate the machines that do the counting. So that's the only thing I have to add to our election code. I told myself that I would put it in as an amendment and just forgot about it until we started talking about the code here today. So I'd like to see if that could happen, Alexis. Do you have any opinions on that?
So I would think how that is set up would need to be not the poll watchers attending, honestly. I don't think that would need to be put in here. I think it would need to be put in here, just not as important as a process laid out for how that actually takes place. And I don't have that off the top of my head.
Right, the process to me would be up to the election board to put that in their policy or however you do that.
Okay.
But just the fact that a poll watcher can observe the calibration of the counting machines, I think needs to be in the code. Not as a processing, just as an allowable observation that they can make by law. So because poll watchers are in code, And like I said, I'm just now thinking about this right now. I don't, if I need to look into it and write my own amendment for it, I can. If you guys are amenable to putting it in there, I'd prefer you guys to do that. So that's where I am on that. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead.
So I can't speak for the board. They're not here right now. But I would say you could put an amendment in I-1. Watchers may be present for, trying to think of what, machine testing? Machine. I come up with something better than off the top of my head. I'd have to go look at other legislation, I'm not going to lie, but maybe it's a possibility to do it on the floor.
The election supervisor, you would be amenable to
Putting
that in there. Okay.
We love people coming and watching our process because then we can show that we aren't
I vouch
rigging
for that. I vouch for that because when I walked away from there, I was able to say I saw no part of our process that was questionable at all. And you guys were so very good to contact me to be able to be there at every part of the process. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And I know you guys do like people too.
We love people to walk away feeling really good about our election process. And I just wanna, on that note, actually, I do wanna say there is nobody in this world important enough to me to rig an election, you guys. I'm sorry. But this is my livelihood, and I don't care what candidates are on the ballot. I'm just going to do my job and do it the right way. And I'm pretty sure everybody else with me is the same way.
I agree.
Anything else?
No other questions, right? What else do you have?
I don't think I have anything. I know that Congresswoman Goodfox touched on the mailing issues coming up possibly, and I did already start doing research. I know that nothing has been shut down yet as of right now, but my concern is, which I know it would change if USPS went away, for lack of better terms, but we do have 1300-ish voters with post office boxes that we have on our voter registry list, and then 41 of those voted in 2024 with post office boxes. And I know FedEx and UPS do not deliver to post office boxes, but I'm sure those addresses would change. So
interesting. Okay. Questions? Where are we at? Because we've got a little over about 8 minutes and one more bill on here. And we've talked about a lot, but I would like to hear from the committee. Where are we at with this piece of... Well, you're not. So if Maria had an amendment, it could come on Monday. But we've talked about a lot of stuff. We've talked about extending session. We've talked about a special session. I still think we probably need a special session, to be honest. But if the committee wants to pass this out, you feel comfortable, you feel good, and Congresswoman Whitehorn wants to make her amendment next Monday, we could vote on that then. All right, Chair will entertain any motions.
Chair.
Congresswoman Whitehorn, Redcorn, sorry.
Motion to report ONCA 25-77 to Congress with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Well, it wasn't technically amended.
No, we did amend it. We did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you amended at the beginning. All right.
Second.
Motion and a second. All of those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Any opposed say no. It passes. Thank you. And you'll likely see an amendment, which you agree with. I think the board would agree with too. That's just an extra layer of protection that's
harmless.
Yeah, it is smart. So, okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you. We are now on ONCR 2514, a resolution to request the placement of fee lands into trust by the Secretary of the Interior. The sponsor is Congressman Big Horse. He is not present. You are the co-sponsor, Congresswoman Rivard?
Yes.
Okay, you have the floor.
Thank you. So I think this resolution came from the executive office. And as you know, because we put into law that the request to put land into trust should come through this body now. It looks like gaming is asking to put some more of our land into trust. And one looks like it's at Skytook and one at Tulsa. And if you guys that have been around a long time, I won't call you by name. If you remember, there's pieces of our gaming or at our facilities, you know, that there's the parts of it that are in trust for gaming. And then there's parts of the land around it that's in trust, but not for gaming. Okay, so when that happens, I think that piece doesn't go through the Bureau, but more so you can apply to put, to change, to specify what your status should be, whether it's gaming or non-gaming. And I think when it's non-gaming, they call it ag. I see Katie Jo's here. She's probably better to speak to that. I think, and last I remember, and she'll probably correct me, that there's like 16 steps to putting something into trust. Now, I don't know that that would take all of the steps because this is already into trust, but it looks as though from what in talking to Kimberly, she's actually meeting with another Congress member at 2, so she's not able to meet with us, is that they're doing it to get ready for the sports book or e-gaming in the future. So if you remember when we toured the Tulsa property, and Speaker Shaw could speak to this too, I'm sure, being in gaming with this background. If you notice at our property in Tulsa, then we have all of our non-gaming like designed out because, you know, the hotel, the pool, the event center, everything non-gaming's on that side, just as well as Skytook, the banquet room, the pool. And I think casinos designed that on purpose that way. But I'm not for sure, but I think it is something they consider when they build. Is that correct, Speaker? Because the goal is you always, you know, that you always want to expand. And if you guys remember that they, when we went to the Tulsa Casino, they had said that they were going to expand. And that's what the information I've received from Kimberly.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
So what's being requested to be put into trust, the Skytook parcel and the Tulsa parcel are requesting to be shifted over to the purposes of gaming. They're already in trust, or are there some that aren't in trust at all? Or is it just a switch of the status for gaming?
Yes, that's what I understand.
Everything's already in trust.
Yes, and okay. So what I'm understanding is that it's already in trust, but they are requesting that some of that land, the status of it is changed to gaming, for gaming purposes. And I feel like since Katie's here, we should talk to her about this because this, I'm not an expert in this field, she is. I mean, we only have a couple of Osages that really can put land into trust. Kimberly's one of them. Katie Jo's one of them. And Melissa was one of them. All three women. I mean, I'm sorry, did I say that? I meant these three Osages can really put land into trust rather quickly. So, and follow those steps. So, Katie, if you come to the podium, it's green. Okay.
Hi, everybody.
Okay. Those properties are in trust already. I've confirmed it with GIS, KP Gilmore, and Natasha. We've talked. Has Ms. Pearson laid out the steps that she thinks are necessary to convert it from non-gaming to gaming? I would like to hear that.
So, if I may, Chair, again, this resolution came from the executive branch, I believe, to down to this body. I don't think it was drafted by Trey, but if you look at the, you know, the whereas, it just describes the nation, you know, states the same, the language that were federally recognized and things of that nature. But what I, in the therefore be it resolved, it's saying that the Osage Nation executive branch is directed to take all actions necessary to place land into trust, which isn't the...
So the land is already in trust.
Yeah.
So I see, no, I'm sure I think
Trey.
I know.
Oh. Trey, go ahead.
Thank you. So this resolution was, as I understand it, drafted through gaming, and Mrs. Pearson sent it to Congressman Big Horse directly, and then I had her send me the Word version so that I didn't mess up the legal descriptions by retyping them. But it's my understanding that it came from Kimberly Pearson herself. I don't know who actually drafted it, and this may be a copy and paste, so if we need to make some amendments, we can do that.
Okay. Katie?
I would strongly agree and request politely that there are amendments made as far as throughout the bill. It says fee lands in here. They're already in trust. I know what the, I think I know what the intended purpose of this is. We haven't had any conversations with executive or gaming, but just from looking at it, myself and the superintendent, I think they are wanting to, you know, like you said, convert the intended use. The actual conveyance, though, the action of conveyance is complete. You don't go back and reclassify it. You know, there's lengthy communications and documentation on file of this property being put into trust for non-gaming. With that being said, when this first was published, I funneled it up to the higher ups at Region and our realty officer. There's the conveyance part is all we have, our portion, the 151, which is putting it into trust for the intended use at that time. The designation from non-gaming to gaming, that may be part 292, so that might be the Office of Indian Gaming or NIGC. I know in the past there's been tribes that have brought land into trust, promised no gaming, and then gamed later on. I don't know what the rules, procedures or violations, penalties are for gaming on non-gaming trust parcels. But I don't think going through the Bureau of Indian Affairs would be the right move. I believe it could maybe still go through this, you know, Department of Interior, through the Office of Indian Gaming, or through NIGC. I'll defer.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, well, this is where we're at. We are past the time. We have another meeting in 30 minutes. We have a resolution that was filed on 421. And it is 424. It's being heard for the first time in committee. And we hear that we need amendments. So I don't know about anyone else, but add this to the special session list is what I'm thinking.
And Chair, if I may, I did, in speaking to Kimberly.
May not.
Thank you. I said, Petty Jo doesn't like you speaking to me like
don't
that.
Talk to me.
In speaking she to
said,
Kimberly.
She said that
where's
was awesome.
Where's OMPD? Kimberly said that was flat because I said this may go on a special session. Okay. And she said that was fine because I said we didn't want to rush it. You know,
yeah,
it's important.
When we hear Katie Jo say this needs some work, and legal say this needs some work, and the chair will entertain a motion to postpone ONCR 2514 to the call of the chair.
Second.
All those in favor of the motion signify by saying yes.
Yes.
No opposed. Motion carries.
You should just say
we postponed capital projects. I think these can be added to it. Okay. Without objection, we're adjourned. Thank you.
Okay, so
we're getting coffee.
I don't